Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Last night, I returned together with Venerable Tita Panyo from being away from the monastery for a few days, four nights, I guess it was. And we returned just before evening puja, and I went in just to briefly say hello to Ajahn Yatiko, let him know we'd fully returned. And he invited me to offer a reflection tonight on our time, Tantita Panyo, and our time away. And probably a majority of the people in the room know that we had left here on Monday of this week to go out to the coast, to Fort Bragg, to a monthly Dhamma gathering there at Three Jewels Dhamma Hall for the North Coast Sangha. And then just a few days before going, Tantita Panyo had said to me, maybe I can go with you and we can walk back. Can walk back, because he and I over the last couple of months he had approached me about the possibility of doing a short walking pilgrimage, or what they call in Thai tudong, walking tour, walking pilgrimage. And my time here is not very long. I'm not due to stay here much longer, and things were going on, and it wasn't looking like we were going to find any sort of suitable time window of time to approach the sangha about giving us permission to do. But he had his radar turned on, and he thought, oh. So he came up with this idea just a few days before, and then we ran the idea past Lumpur Pisano, and he was very supportive, very encouraging. But he said, yeah, just sounds like a solid plan. Run it past the community at the business meeting on Sunday afternoon. So Sunday afternoon being 22 hours before leaving on Monday afternoon. So it was great. It was really a very useful process to even get the permission, which was very simple, and the community was fully supportive and encouraging. But to that sort of not sure element of whether we were going or not was present right up until 22 hours before going, and I very much appreciated that process, and to see what that did to the mind and the heart, that not sure, that uncertain element, which is so much a basis for the Buddha's teachings, you know, that not sure. So anyway, just so people know that this walk did happen, and so this evening's reflection will be just sharing some, I don't know how much of a travel log it'll be, I don't know how much Dhamma element, I have no idea what I'm going to say, I mean, apart from the subject matter, but we'll see what comes up, just share some of the experiences, both the external experiences, but also the internal experiences. Tantita Panyo, I don't think there's a lot of members of the community on forest practice, which means they practice up in the forest in their cabins. So he's not meant to be here tonight, although he could. And earlier this afternoon, he said I'm not going to be there tonight, but I'll listen to the talk on the recording. I said, no, yeah, you were there. So when we were at the North Coast Sangha there at the Dhamma offering that I presented on the Monday evening, Metika, who heads up that group, she asked me actually if I would speak a little bit about, you know, why I was doing it and what I'd been going through my mind leading up to it, because I'd mentioned it to her on the phone. And I'd mentioned her how, compared to the only other time I've done a walking pilgrimage, it was, I had permission 2 years, or, yeah, almost 2 years before going, and had it all planned, you know, well in terms of, because it involved going to another country, and it was more, well, I had the excuse that it was more to plan, and I was just telling her how different it was, not knowing you were going to do something until 22 hours before, how much I was really enjoying that. Just, oh, right, okay, tomorrow we're going. instead of planning for 18 months or 20 months, and how much the mind can create stories and projections and ideas and ideals. So she asked me to speak on that night last Monday. And then during the Q&A, the question and answer period at the end, when we opened things up, one man, I really appreciated how he asked it. He just looked at me and he said, "Why would you want to do this?" You know, because we explained our tradition of wandering, and there's many ways you can do wandering pilgrimages. You can do them just as a single monk or a group of monks, or you can take along maybe a novice or an anagarika, or you can walk with a layperson. You can plan where you're going and how long you're going, or you can keep it open-ended, or you can accept maybe invitations. People say, "Oh, well, please stop by my place when you're walking through such and such a town." Or you can just go out anonymously and not have anybody know at all. There's so many different ways. You can make vows or determinations that you won't accept any rides. You can create your own boundaries or open it up to no boundaries and just live within your monastic rule. So this man, he asked, you know, when we explained how we live, you know, not having money, not having, you know, carrying food, and he really just shook his head, why? And I said, well, you know, in the monastery can also, even though we live every day on alms food, every day we live on alms food, everything in the monastery that you see or touch is freely donated without us doing any fundraising or asking for things. You know, it's only if people want to know what we need that we're allowed to let people maybe know what's needed. So every day is like that, whether you're in the monastery or outside. But there is, I've only lived in this monastery on and off over the last 12 years, and I've never not had breakfast. I've never not had our main meal. I've never not had a roof over my head. I've never not had vitamins and Band-Aids and toothpaste. The list is endless. And then to pull out the support pins, you know, to kind of take away the scaffolding, so to speak, and to, well, this is the way I explained it, and the way I sort of hold it is to then step out, and all you have is your monastic rule, and then you have your Dhamma training, you know, the Dhamma that you've been applying and learning and applying and practicing, and you have your robes, and you have your alms bowl. And, of course, it is 2014. I also have a very, very good sleeping bag. And a ground cloth. And, you know, a couple of things, a few things. But you don't have all of the normal, your comfort zone kind of disappears, you know. And to me, that's the at least here again, I'm not experienced doing Tudong. I've only done two Tudongs in my life. But this is what I really feel the great benefit of just walking with another monk, another bhikkhu, so we both have the same monastic, you know, set of rules, you know, not being able to receive the money, not being able to receive food in the afternoon and keep it till tomorrow. We can't do that. We can't carry food. And you just have your feet and your map and an idea. So that was a good start. I felt, you know, to just also be explaining that, because voicing those things to that gentleman that evening really helped it focus into my mind. I can't speak for Tenti Tapanya, but I think also for him. So anyway, the next morning, after staying the night there in Fort Bragg, we're offered a breakfast there, as is done each time the monastics go out. And then we started walking, and her place is just about a couple of miles from Fort Bragg town center. So we thought, you know, by the time we got going and, you know, packed up and everything and had walked into the middle of the town, it was actually time to do what we call our alms round, you know, our walking for alms. So we went off to the side where we'd be out of the way in a sort of empty parking lot and pulled out our alms bowls out of our backpacks and prepared them, and then started walking slowly through the town. with our alms bowls and our backpacks. We don't usually have our backpacks when we go alms round, so in places like Ukiah, so that's always interesting. And just walking and, you know, walking past stores, cafes, just walking slowly, peacefully, in a single file, one behind the other. And then with the idea that, you know, we would continue on, there's a market, you know, a little small supermarket down at the end, south end of town, that if nothing happened before then, that we would stand somewhere not too close, but someplace visible nearby so that people could approach us if they wanted to find out what we were doing, and then maybe perhaps food would materialize or perhaps not. But we were nearly there to that store. Nothing had happened, and we were getting down towards that part of town, and I just happened to glance, you know, from the side of the road. There was a sort of parallel driveway, and there's this woman sitting in a car with a big smile on her face, waving, come here, just beaming. And we got close enough, and she'd say, "Can I offer you some food?" And my answer was, "Yes." Yes, that's what we're doing. We're walking for food alms. And the second thing she said was, "My friend in Texas just ordained as a Buddhist monk. He's a Texan." So she was somewhat clued in and just very excited because she had, I think, just days earlier gotten an email from him saying. And so this was just about an hour after leaving Three Jewels Dhamma Hall. You know, we just set out and not knowing whether we would get food or not, not knowing whether we would eat again that day. And yes, we had to have breakfast, so that's, you know, it's, you know, as we often say in our tradition, that's good enough. You know, it's good enough. We'd actually had food, and as most people know, you can live for a number of days, if not, you know, a few weeks without food. So even if it's uncomfortable, we knew we could keep walking, even if nobody else, if we didn't have any other food. So anyway, she said, "Well, look, I'll take you to," I think we were near a McDonald's, and she said, I'll take you there and buy you some food." And then she realized that her wallet, she'd left it at home. And she said, "Not to worry," she said, we'll go to my house, then you can meet my husband, and I'll get my wallet." So she drives us to her house, and I sort of jokingly said, because she was very lighthearted, and she's saying something along the lines of, "I'm not quite, my husband's not going to be expecting this." And I said, "Yeah," sort of, you know, "Honey, look what I brought home," you know, to two Buddhist monks. And we met him and went in the house, and there was this immediate sort of, I think we all felt just really comfortable and glad to be meeting. It was very evident right from the start that, because all of a sudden the conversation got really interesting right away. And they ended up taking us back into the center of town and taking us for lunch in a restaurant so we could actually speak. It wasn't just giving food. They wanted actually to spend time with us. And I found it a very moving experience. Both Tenti Tipanyu and I think both agreed. We spoke about it a lot afterwards because this couple, he had been a special ops soldier for the bulk of his life. He's still quite a young man. He's probably in his 40s and is going through, you know, he's been out of the military service for over 10 years now, but he was sharing things that were, I found, really his honesty and openness and his openness to receive us and his kindness and his and her kindness and generosity was just so sincere and so open and trusting. I mean, here's somebody, we're just we're monks, obviously, with robes, but you know, just walking on the street, and then his wife brings home somebody that, you know, he'd never met. But just this immediate trust that I think we all four of us felt with each other, even though we were coming from such different places. Such different places on one level, but on the human level, we weren't. So on the cultural or social level, or our upbringing and where we were raised, and different values perhaps, but the value of kindness and generosity and trust and honesty, I felt it. And I already received, when I got back, this morning I checked my emails, and we already have an email from him and his wife saying how much they appreciated and the opportunity, and that they want to carry on, contact. And he's coming to England, where I'm going to be going next in a couple of months, and he's coming through England in this summer, and he wants to come and visit me at the monastery. And so this was a very interesting coming together, and just an hour after starting our walk. And so, I mean, there's more I could talk about this particular thing, but in a way I don't want to say too much about it, because it felt also some of it quite private. And I might just keep that to myself. So, however, when they dropped us off back where we had been collected off the road, we were just fixing our packs and putting away our bowls and getting ourselves sorted out, and this car pulls up 3 feet away from us and says, pulls out 2 ice cold bottles of mineral water. Can I offer you some water? Sure. It's getting hot. Great. Then he drives off, and not more than a minute later, a car pulls up and says, do you need a lift? Just because we were sort of stationary, and sort of sorting ourselves out, this kindness and generosity, it kept arriving. And then we said, well, no, thanks so much. And he and his wife had actually looped around. They'd driven past and obviously talked about it, and they had looped back to ask. So it wasn't just that he had happened to be right there, but he and his wife made a point of coming back out of kindness and thoughtfulness. So this kept happening, throughout the day, just in different forms. Our support of food had been met. We'd actually had 2 meals that day, not just 1. So we had energy to walk. We had the energy to carry on and to walk with enough strength and to be safe, and then walking later on, people would wave or call out, flash the peace sign. The peace sign seems to be very popular. It was popular when I was a kid in the 60s and 70s. It seems to be, it probably never died out, but it seems to be very popular, especially in Mendocino County coast. And so we were just meeting with kindness and positive energy. And if anybody did feel any negativity towards us, they were practicing restraint. They did not show that to us at all. Farther down the road we got, and there's a thing in California here called Caltrans. And Caltrans, California Transport looks after the roadways, the highways. And oftentimes they're the brunt of jokes. People that are always driving past them will joke and say things like, Caltrans is doing this or that, or not doing this and that. And you'll see Caltrans, you'll see 40 of them standing there, but nobody doing anything, but that's not really true. But they are the brunt of jokes, and I will never, ever joke about them again, because we were walking past some roadworks, and I called out to the flag person. They were having to close one lane and just let one lane through at a time on a 2-lane highway, cars from one end to the other. And I called over to the woman holding the stop sign, and I said, what side would you prefer to have us on? On your side of the road or ours? I wanted them to feel comfortable with where we were walking through the roadworks. So she got on her walkie-talkie, and she spoke to her foreperson, and she said, no, come to my side of the road. So I did, and I said, thank you, and we thanked her for that, and then we were walking along the side at the edge of the road, and then I got about halfway through. It was only maybe, 100 yards, maybe 300 feet, 400 feet of roadworks. And we got about halfway through, and I realized that they had blocked off both ends for us. She had closed her end, and the man at the other end had closed his end, so that they weren't allowing any cars through. And so just as I realized that, there was another, I think the foreman was standing there, right there by, and I was smiling, and I said, look, thanks for all of this, but look, we can pull off to the side, if you want to let cars through, this is fine for us. We're going to be fine. He said, no. No, he said, we want you to be safe. We want you to be absolutely safe for this. Oh. Just, it sounds simple. It sounds like maybe this is their policy even. But just to have that, and the way it was done, and the kindness with which it was done, it struck both of us, It kind of elevated it from the ordinary, at least the way I normally would view that, to know this is being kind to people they don't know, and making sure that walkers are safe. But that first day, it was a long walk, and we walked, I think, in the end, 19 miles, and here again, comparing to the only other walking pilgrimage I did, when I trained for it and trained and trained and trained and trained, and I went walking every day with my backpack full of dumbbells and bottles of water and got into shape and got through the blister period, and I was really ready. And this one, I did no training. Neither of us did training. I'm also 23 years older than my walking partner is, so it's a... He didn't seem to suffer the same things I did in terms of physical limitations, but it was very evident, by the end of the day, I was feeling pretty sore. And so we carried on walking, and I know that area from when I was a layperson. From my very young child, I used to go up there with my family, and we used to stay in different hotels and motels and inns along the... And I knew of some hidden coves, And I'd been told that on the Monday night gathering, I'd ask about one or two of the coves, because I thought that would be a good place to sleep, because we can't just kind of turn up at the hotel and say, okay, room for two. However, we couldn't find the trail down to the places that we had been told still existed. And, yes, you can get down there, and all beaches in California are public access, but we couldn't find it. And it was getting dark. So we carried on walking. I thought, well, at least we'll get into the next town, Albion, and we can sleep under a bridge or something. I don't know. We'll figure something out. And so we're walking, and then all of a sudden I look up, and there's a man sitting on the other side of the road. He'd pulled over in his Jeep, and he rolled down his window and said, can I offer you a lift? And I looked at him, and I said, no, but are you local? I said, thank you for offering, but are you local? And he said, yeah, I'm very local. And I said, may I ask some advice? He said, sure. So we went over across the street, across the highway. So I explained to him, I said, we're two Buddhist monks. He says, so am I. And so I, oh, wow. He said, yeah, I'm a Zen. I have a Zen ordination. And so they don't always wear their robes. And I explained that we were just looking for maybe a little beach or a little patch of forest nearby where we could sleep without disturbing anybody, and that we wouldn't use any fire. We don't use campfire. We don't cook. We don't do anything. And he just looked at us and said, I've just constructed a 30-foot diameter yurt on my property. He says, please, I invite you to come and sleep safely and warmly here at my house. Sure. No problem. So we did, and then it turned out that Metika, the night before, had been quoting him. He had given a talk at her Dhamma Center over the years. He's been part of that sort of group. He also has his own meditation sangha, his own group there in Albion. He knows Ajahn Amaro. He's met our monks before in various... He's never been here. Many, many common friends... goes to Thailand a lot, goes to Laos. He's a sculptor also. So we get into his yurt, and it's just full of many Thai Buddha images. He was a scholar in both our tradition of Buddhism and the Mahayana tradition. he had the suttas all up on his books, you know, the books of suttas in the Pali tradition, our tradition. I think he's more well versed in the suttas than I am. It was pretty clear. And so we were having Dhamma discussions right off the bat, and just, you know, well into the evening and late into the night. And then the next morning he kindly invited us to have some breakfast, and we were just kept talking Dhamma and having really great, interesting conversations and meeting this. So, and here again, it's this just came out of the blue. Just, we had no idea where we were going to sleep, leaving Fort Bragg. And then that was the end of the first day. Into the second day was just, here again, this spontaneous coming together. And this happened to be an incredibly like-minded person. You know, it all fit in. And then after when we got time to sort of, you know, we said, well, we should get on the road. And then I realized we didn't really know where we were. Because when we got in his car, we were talking so much, I wasn't paying any attention to where we were going. And we were a couple of miles off the highway, and I just said, where are we? And he laughed. He says, oh, you just turn right out of my driveway, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. You're 2 miles from Albion. And so that was where we had planned to do alms round on that day. So, but the night at North Coast Sangha, at Metika's place, there was a man there named Peter who said, oh, well, I live down 2 miles from Albion. He says, perhaps I'll see you on the road. So no sooner had we turned out of this man's house with the yurt, and we had just been walking about a minute, and this man Peter drives by. Turns out he lives almost across the street. And so he stopped and he says, oh, I found you. Have you eaten? And we said, yes. He said, great. He says, good luck. So he just wanted to check and make sure we'd had some food. He had been looking for us that morning a little bit. Not long, fortunately, so he hadn't searched too long and wide. So we got down to Albion, and which is a very small town, and little did I didn't realize how alternative, quote-unquote, Albion is, and I think it's even known as the nation of Albion, somebody said to me. I think it's a self-proclaimed by its local residents, and it's got a lot more to it than you see when you just drive through. So anyway, we stood just about 80 feet opposite the little general store, and there's a post office there, and we prepared ourselves to do alms, and by just standing there, you know, off. We didn't want to be blocking anybody, so we stood where nobody would have to walk past us, but they would be able to see us if they wanted, were interested in what we were doing. And we had lots of time. It was fairly early in the morning in terms of alms rounds, about 9:30. So we had very relaxed, just standing peacefully in the sun. And there's a lot of colorful characters in Albion. And the store is I guess, quite well known for it being a sort of coming together place, a meeting place. And people were very friendly to us and very, very, there was a very good vibe, very good atmosphere there. And one man came after saying good morning, and then he came out of the store with two apples and put one in each of our bowl, and we had a bit of a conversation. I said, may we offer you some chanting, you know, little blessing chant. And I said, this is in Indian language. He said, Pali? Is it in Pali? I said, yes. And he said, oh, yeah, good. And then we chanted. He says, was that the three refuges? And I said, well, no, not really, but it's somewhat derived from. He said, oh, okay, great. He said, thank you. That's very, you know, and then he took off, walked back to his house, and then long while, and other colorful characters came up and spoke to us. And that was quite interesting, and told us a lot about how they perceive Buddhism and things like that. My favorite being the fact that we were told that the Buddha lived on one cannabis seed a day. He would eat one marijuana seed a day to live on. And this gentleman told us this, and he said, had you heard that? And I said, well, no, I hadn't heard that before. But I said that to some of our monks, and one of our monks said, I'd heard that. By the way, it's not a practice that we do here. Okay, just so you know. But he was a very interesting person, and but I didn't want to contend with him by saying that I didn't make, like giving my opinion about it. I didn't want to contend with him, so I just said no. I hadn't heard that. But after another long while, somebody came out of the store, and I didn't realize at the time, but that he was the owner of the store. And one of the reasons why we, you know, apart from, you know, maybe disturbing any possible patrons to a store, you know, because maybe people, if they see somebody outside that they perceive as begging, or even though we can't ask for anything, they might not know that. And so one of the reasons, you know, is to not stand too close, is so that people feel totally unobstructed and free, and not feel put off by walking past us. So that's why we didn't want anybody to walk past us, but also because that could also affect the business of the store negatively. And maybe the shop owners would, or managers could feel maybe, you know, uncomfortable. And it's not, you know, it's not unheard of monks or nuns being asked to move on. It's happened to me. So that's why we were trying to be very sensitive. But so little did I know that when this one man came out, is that he was actually the store owner, and he had a bag of food for us. And he said, yeah, I've got a good lunch for you here, and had these sandwiches made especially for you, vegetarian sandwiches. And then right behind him came this other woman, and with a bags of grapes for us. And we had just finished doing chanting for him. And then I said, well, she offered the food and said, I'd like to offer chanting for you. We would like to do that. And I started here again. I started saying, you know, this is in our Indian scriptural language. She goes, Pali? And she went, Metta, which means loving kind, Karuna. So she was saying these Pali terms. And we also found out that she had been up to also to Metika's Sangha before. And we kept meeting more and more people that had been to her group, which was, I found, very, very inspiring to know how many people, even if they don't go every week, they at least know that she's there and they've been there, and people who have benefited from her good work. So then, you know, we just thought, you know, after they went away, we thought, you know, this is enough. We didn't want to stay there standing any longer, the owner of the store. And it was good to know that he wasn't offended. We hadn't offended anybody there, hadn't caused any sort of disturbance. So we just quietly went and had our food and then started walking. So that day, the walking was, I realized after a few miles that I was, about every mile we went, I seemed to develop a new pain in my body, somewhere below the waist, somewhere below my hips, from hips down. And so I sensed this, I could feel this little fear, this little fear in the back of my mind saying, can you finish? What's going to happen? Are you going to be able to finish? This niggling little worry. But I was going okay. We went a few more miles down the road, and we turned off Highway 1 onto Highway 128, which heads through the redwoods, through the Navarro. It follows the Navarro River. Many of you might know it. It's very beautiful. No houses. It's, I think, 11 miles of state park lining the road, protecting the redwoods. Very beautiful. But my body was, yeah, definitely making itself known. Right. Ahinsako, you got the idea to walk, but we have a different idea. Hips. My knees were okay. Calves, right ankle, left foot blisters. But we kept going. I didn't say anything. We would take breaks occasionally. And we got back out. And taking a break, all the pain started getting worse because the body was seizing up. And we got back out on the road, and Venerable Tita Panio, I hear him say behind me, he says, Ajahn, are you limping? I went, no, I'm hobbling. Now, I don't know the difference. I haven't looked it up. I don't know the actual difference between the word limp and hobble. But in my mind, limping is more like one leg, and hobbling is more two legs. At least that's the way I used it that day. So I jokingly said that to Tenti Tapanyo. And he was very, very immediately, he says, "Can I carry any of your gear for you? Can I carry, like, for instance, the bottles of water?" Which we had to carry a lot of water because there was no place to refill. We knew that, so we were carrying quite a lot of water. And water weighs a lot. Our actual gear didn't weigh all that much, but water weighs a lot. And he was just so kind and so immediate. And I really appreciated that. And I said, "I'll save that as a last resort. I'll keep going. I think I'm okay." I said, "I'm just going to have to go a lot slower." So I'd figured out our average speed up till then had been about 3 miles an hour, and I halved it down to about 1.5 miles an hour. But then the body loosened up again. The little voice back here started relaxing. The little voice saying, "Not going to make it. What if you don't make it?" The other voice here saying, "If you don't make it, you don't make it. We'll somehow accept one of those rides that people keep offering us." We knew we would have to get some rides anyway, because we were to walk 80 miles in 3 days was going to be too much for us. So I knew that at some point we would have to accept rides to get to certain towns to do alms round, and also to get to our rendezvous in Cloverdale. So, but it was still strange how this little voice, that little inner voice, "What if you don't finish?" Ah! Suffering that I created in my mind. This is just another reminder of how we create our own suffering by attaching to an idea, to an ideal of, oh, tudong, walking pilgrimage, walk the whole way or walk as much as possible, not defeated by pain, whatever. And none of these I'd really thought of. None of them had been fully conscious in my mind. Until I only realized when the body started packing up and the mind threw out the little fear. And then, because at least I had enough mindfulness to catch it soon enough to go, not important. The important thing about the walk for us was the not certain element, the unsure element. Pull out the supports. Take out the support, take away the scaffolding, go out on the road, see what happens. It's not about finishing, as they say in some parts of it, it's not product, it's process, you know. It's the process, it's the journey, not the destination. And so I was able to let go and then to be able to walk peacefully with this pain, and also to use that pain as a meditation. And to be mindful, and I said, "Oh, Tenti Tapanyo, if you see me favoring one side too much or leaning, let me know, because it's really important that you try to walk as straight as possible, because you'll give yourself another injury by walking out of balance, especially with a backpack." But the pain started going away, and I could endure. It wasn't that bad. Pain wasn't that bad, but what would the more painful thing was the little voice saying, "Not going to finish. What if you don't finish?" So we carried on, and I decided, you know, it was a joint decision. I said, "We should not leave these redwoods to find a place to sleep." And the redwoods go on for 11 miles. We should camp out someplace within the last mile, because we'd noticed everywhere else was just private property, no trespassing. You know, trespassers will be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. We didn't see any that said trespassers will be shot. But, you know, this is a country that allows guns. And you never know whose property you could stray onto. Maybe somebody's doing things that they don't want somebody to see. You know, this county is famous for things like that. So I said, "Well, we'll find a place to camp in the redwoods before we leave the state park." Because it's one thing for a state policeman to come up and say, "What are you doing?" And it's another thing to have somebody come up with a gun and say, what are you doing on my land? So it was great. Just in the last mile, we were watching the mile markers. The road is very well marked. And after the 12-mile marker of that highway, we started earnestly looking for a place to sleep that was suitable. And we found a great place. We were only maybe 120 feet off the road, in between the road and the river, underneath these very old redwoods. And all, if you've been in a redwood forest before, the forest floor is very soft. It's very quiet because it absorbs sound. Redwood forests don't have a lot of, there's not so much life that actually wants to live in a redwood forest, especially around the insect world. It just doesn't support certain things. And for instance, no rodents came near us. I don't know whether it supports that, and we were just lucky. But we didn't have tents. We just put down our, a cloth and a sleeping bag. And I had a mosquito net. I opened it up for the first time and realized that somebody had cut the whole thing up the middle. So it wasn't a circle anymore. It was just a sheet. So I just pulled it over my head. I just draped it over me. And it did the trick. And anyway, the mosquitoes, they weren't that bad anyway. They don't have malaria, so it's not like you're going to get sick. And so it was very peaceful. Because not many people drive that road at night, so hardly any cars even went past 120 feet away. And it was just really quite magical, to look up and just look through these giant trees at the stars and to be out peaceful, quiet. Not knowing if I had no fear. It's interesting. I didn't have any fear about, being attacked by whatever, be it human or non-human. But and before we went to bed, also we did some chanting. There's some chanting, especially recognizing the other beings in the area, that there could be other beings, and just putting out some positive, peaceful vibrations, that we were going to be sleeping in a place where other beings are living. So the next day was going to be our last full day of walking, and that would be the day that I knew we wouldn't be able to walk the whole way. So we walked about 2 or 3 miles out of the redwoods, past a little town called Navarro, and we looked at the general store, didn't look too hopeful. But it was very early. It was only about 8:30. So we walked another way along the way, and then I thought, well, we need to get to either the next town, Philo or Boonville. Boonville being the preferable one, because, it was a bigger town. And so I thought, okay, we've been offered all these rides. Now when we need a ride, how does this work? So I said, okay, let's try just taking our backpack off, lean them together, and we'll turn to face the oncoming traffic and sort of look like we need a ride. And so we did that for about 15 minutes. Not much traffic, and also nothing happened. So I said to Tenti Dipani, I said, is hitchhiking against our rule? And he says, I haven't heard of it. And he says, there are certain cases where you're allowed to ask for certain services from people. You just can't ask for material things. And, it depends. It's quite complicated rules. And I said, yeah, and we're not asking directly. So I said, are you comfortable with me sticking out my thumb? He said, sure. He says, you can do the first 15 minutes. I'll do the second 15 minutes. We can trade back and forth. So we did that. We put ourselves in a place that gave cars a long stretch to pull over. It was a wide pull-out. And so I did something I haven't done since I was 12 years old, and I stuck my thumb out, hitchhiking. And not many cars going past, but we had a lot of time. So it was just peaceful. Every time a car would, I'd see it coming, it was about half a mile down the road, it would come around the corner, and I'd thumb out. And I wouldn't look right at the driver. I thought, just look peaceful, don't stare at anybody, just look peaceful. And then after about 10 or 15 minutes, a car pulls over, rolls down the window, and it's a woman alone, well, with a 2-year-old child in the back seat, in the car seat. And she rolled down the, the, the window on our side of the car, and I just said good morning. I explained who we were, two Buddhist monks, walking pilgrimage. We would really appreciate getting to Boonville. And I said, are you going as far as Boonville? She said, yeah, I'm going to Cloverdale. Without any hesitation, she'd pulled over. Without any hesitation, she'd allowed us to get in her car. Single person, single woman, with a two-year-old child. I wouldn't have done that. I don't think I would have done that. I don't know whether I would have had the trust. And then people say, well, you know, but you're Buddhist monks. Well, yes, we are Buddhist monks, but we met somebody later that day who said he'd seen us on the road and he thought we were two escaped prisoners in our orange prison outfits. Because she started pulling over well before, I mean, she probably, I don't know whether she could see what we were by the time she had started signaling and pulling over, because it was from quite a ways away. And we got in her car, and she just was so kind, and we got into a Dhamma discussion. Turns out she had also been to Metticus, but a long time ago. But she started sharing her meditation practice with us. She was talking about meditation, and she didn't have the language that we're used to using. She had perfect language skills, and she was describing very clearly, and she described, she says, yeah, this is the meditation I do because at this point in my life, this is what I feel I need support in, which was something very challenging. And I just said, well, you've just described one of the most important meditations that the Buddha taught, and that's the meditation on loving kindness. And she just described, and she hadn't learned it from anybody. She just intuitively had taught herself to do this and was benefiting from it. And this is all, you know, we were only driving a few miles up the road. You know, I think we were only in her car for about 15 minutes. And then talking Dhamma, and then she, you know, we had a Dhamma exchange, and then, you know, coming out of that and the situation she's in, and we were actually still talking after she pulled over to drop us off. And then I asked her if we could offer her, you know, a chant, you know, to acknowledge her kindness and generosity. And so she calls back to her two-year-old boy and said, okay, something's going to happen. I said, yeah, we're going to do some singing. So his language skills, chanting probably isn't his vocabulary yet at two. He was talking. I said, we're going to do some singing. She says, he loves singing. And so he had this big smile, dimples. He was smiling, and then he was very quiet while we did the chanting, and then we got out and we went on our way to do our alms round in Boonville. But here again, it says Tenti Tapanu at one point, I think he'd already told me, he says, I'm so glad I'm not walking with a really idealistic Ajahn, you know, with another monk. He says, I'm glad you're willing to accept rides not just be determined to walk, you know, when it's not necessarily possible, but not really. And also, I was glad because that we weren't being overly, because like I said, there's so many different ways you can do these things, and you can learn, and it might be because maybe that's what you need to learn is to not accept rise. Maybe you need that. Maybe you need to make that determination to push through . Or maybe, you know, you need other things, you know, at different times. But the thing that I really became very clear was that how much, and because these people kept voicing their appreciation for having the contact that they were having with us. So this woman was just so grateful for that Dhamma exchange because she's going through something very intense right now in her life. And the way she expressed, it wasn't quite direct, but just that you could feel the appreciation of even just me saying to her how her meditation is just, look, what you're doing is right on. Like, keep doing this. And so you could feel, you know, this sort of, and other people just would stop us. You know, for instance, this one woman had pulled over earlier that morning, it just stopped in the middle of the road. There was nobody driving at that point. And she says, oh, good morning. She said, I just want to wish you well and wish you peace and wish you, you know, really keep going. I hope wish you well for your trip. And then she said, all the way to Mexico. And I looked at her And I went, Mexico? She goes, yeah. I said, no, Cloverdale. And she went, oh, the rumor has it that you're walking to Mexico. And so people had, because they'd been seeing, I'm sure other people have walked in this, along on the same road, they'd seen us on different days. You know, they go to work, they see us walking, they come back from work, they see us walking. And, so she was like, oh, well, that's the rumor that you're going to. I said, no. Very funny. But yeah, I mean, to her just expressing, and then another couple on the very last day stopped, and they seemed like they were in their retirement years. And instead, he just walked, he said, please, he says, hello. He says, so we walked over, and he had a $20 bill in his hand. And he wanted to give it. I explained first. I said, oh, wow, we're really touched by your spontaneous generosity, but our tradition doesn't allow the use of money or to accept money. He went, really? And I said, yeah, there are traditions of Buddhism that they do use money, but ours doesn't. He said, oh, okay, yeah, because I've seen Buddhist monks using money. He said, can I give you some water? So we went over to, he pulled out two ice-cold bottles of very fancy mineral water and from their shopping and gave it to us. And then he said, can I give you some bananas? And then we explained, well, it's after in the afternoon as it is now, we can't accept food and we can't carry food. No money, no food. And he and his wife just said, thank you for doing what you're doing. Thank you for being out on the road like this. She says, and what it does for us to see this. And they said, if we see you tomorrow morning, we will give you some food. If we see you on the road again in the morning. But just the fact that, and because it's very easy to not know, and I'm not talking about monks and lay people, nuns and lay people. I'm talking about just humans and humans. We just don't know usually how we affect people, how our lives and our actions can affect people either way. The full spectrum, we don't realize. Now, obviously, as Buddhist monks, we are samanas, we're religious seekers, we stick out, we're like a beacon. You stand out on the road. I mean, we're very obvious. But it does affect people. I know it's. I've been speaking almost an hour, but I just want to tell one or two last bits, which are very key. We did get to Boonville. We got dropped off. I asked for advice, maybe which store to stand. I didn't tell her what we were doing, but I said, well, what's the kind of hippest store in town where people get food? Because I didn't want to tell her that we were looking for food. So we walked down there, and when we got there, it was closed for one, and then we actually looked. It was not really what we were looking for. And I think the way I explained it wasn't quite clear. But we prepared ourselves for our alms round. We got our bowls out, and we were going to do a walk through the town up and down, and then decide by doing that, just kind of scope out where would maybe be the most appropriate place to stand. So we were walking. We'd only been walking about 3 minutes, and we were walking, and as we do, we try to remain very composed, not be looking around too much like a tourist, just composed, single file, and all of a sudden we hear this voice calling out from about 20 feet away, can we offer you some food? And I look, and there's Debbie and Beth and Dee. Now, most of us in the room know who they are, but Debbie and Beth live here. And Dee has moved to just down the road to be close to our monastery and is a very regular person here, part of the family. And, of course, our answer was, yes. They had been looking for us for, I don't know how long, but we were probably just still in the car getting a ride because they had driven, we probably passed each other on the highway. And they had been looking for us, and they'd actually ask in one of the little cafes, have you seen any Buddhist monks? Sure. Yeah, about 20 minutes ago. Really? We drove down there, down that way, and we didn't see any monks. No. Were they dressed ochre robes? Yes, two Buddhist monks walked past here 20 minutes ago. So they incredibly, with incredible generosity and kindness, had decided amongst the three of them to come and find us. We had no idea that they were coming. So it was for us, it was just a very welcome and spontaneous thing. And however, the local residents and shopkeepers were able to participate by, you know, after being asked, oh, where would be Debbie and whoever went in to ask, you know, is there any place nearby we can have a picnic? And the various shop owners said, oh, you can be back in our back deck area, our patio outside area, and feel free to use the tables and the shade and this space as long as you want, and take up as much space as you want. And then different people came, and then one little worker who was working on one of their shops, we invited him, you know, the Debbie and Beth and Dee invited him to have some food, and he sat down and had some food, and then some of the leftovers were given to one of the shops, and so there were these lovely exchanges, and people came and talked to us, and another guy came up and said, oh, I saw you in the road the other day, you know, yeah, you're doing well, you guys have come a long way, and so able to meet more people. That was where we met the man that first thought we were prisoners, escaped from prison. He was a pretty colorful character. So just yet another aspect of the thing. And then, and just lastly, I'll say that we did walk. The threesome did say that the next 3 miles were a very dangerous road, so two of them stayed behind, and Dee drove the two of us up through that dangerous area, and we started walking. It was getting very hot. And I didn't think I was going to be able to walk very many miles the way my body was going. And Debbie had let some other friends of ours know along that stretch of road that we were going to be walking past, and they had said, oh, well, tell them, if you see them, tell them that they're welcome here to spend the night or to drop in. And seeing all the private property, we thought, this is very important that we make it there. But it was 13 miles from where we got dropped off, and so I thought, well, we'll just maybe try and hitch a ride. But we just kept walking, and my body just kept getting better and better and better, and the pain was going away, and we kept walking, and then it started getting dark, and then we were almost there, sort of, kind of. So we just thought, well, let's just be ultra careful, turn on our flashlights, stand in the ditch, get off the road as much as possible when we saw cars coming. But very dangerous, not to be repeated, by the way. If anybody hears this, whoever's hearing this, do not walk at night on a highway. It was not good. But just, we were a half a mile away from these friends' property, which I've been to before. It's a very large piece of property, like this. And we hear out of the dark, there's a house off on the side of the other side of the road, and we hear, are you okay? Yeah, we're okay. We just have another half a mile to go. Half a mile, we'll give you a ride. Please, come here, we'll give you a ride. Half a mile, it's dangerous. So we go over, and this young couple, all of a sudden see us. I said, look, we're two Buddhist monks. We're also very smelly, very dirty, very sweaty. My robes are soaked. And she says, oh, don't worry, use his car. He'll take his car, which is very funny. They were laughing, and he was all excited to meet the neighbors. He'd never met them. So anyway, he drove us right up into the property, but we couldn't find anybody at home. It's a very large piece of property. We couldn't even really find the houses we were looking for. So we said, well, just leave us be, and we'll find our way. And we found our way. I sort of remember where the house was, and we chose correctly. We got in there, but nobody was home. And so we thought, well, we know they're peaceful people, and they know us, and they had said it would be okay. So we'll just curl up underneath in their apple orchard and just be peaceful and find them in the morning, maybe. So we were sort of still wandering around looking for one of the other houses, and we see headlights coming up, and sure enough, one of them was coming home, and the other one was just behind them a few minutes. But he didn't know, the first person that got there, he didn't know that we were going to be around, and he went, you know, I finally turned my flashlight on me, and he went, looks like a couple of Buddhist monks, you know, and I said, yep. I said, yeah, we've met before, but you won't remember, and we were telling the story, and then he said, yeah, Mary's coming, and then she was glad to see us, and they sorted us out a place to sleep, and here again, it was just really lovely coming together, you know, Dhamma friends in the morning, also where we slept, you know, in his space, and he was very keen to do some sitting meditation the next morning, because we could have maybe walked again the next morning, at least a few miles into Cloverdale where we were expected, and we had an invitation for a meal, and then Beth was going to collect us in the afternoon on our way back from SFO. And so we just let go of the idea of walking altogether because, you know, you could just feel, at least, you know, whether right or wrong, I just felt it was just so right. You know, here was a human being wanting to sit meditation with you. So what's more important, walking or sitting with another human being peacefully in their space? You know, somebody who's a dedicated spiritual seeker, you know, a practitioner, you know, never had monks in his house sitting meditation. So we sat very peacefully. We started with doing some chanting, then did some chanting at the end, and then went up to her space, Mary's space. She was offering us breakfast. He also offered us a little bit, so we were able to participate in food, receive kindness. And then, yeah, and just Mary had already said that she would drive us into Cloverdale. So just it was just really felt totally right to just let go of walking and just be with the flow. I mean, the whole thing, you had to go with flow. You just had to. But just to let go and just, it seemed so right, especially at the last day, to just let go of everything and just, and then also having them voice, oh, you, people should do this more often. You know, to walk more often or to have that opportunity. And so here again, people sharing, you know, how much they appreciate the practice, and in particular this special practice of going out and walking, being visible. It's not like we go out and say, oh, I want to go out on Tudong so I can be visible and be, you know, a visible spiritual seeker. It's not that. But then it's by doing it that you realize how much, like I said earlier, how much human beings, whatever life we're living, how much we affect each other. And that's why, you know, living skillfully, if we can, the more skillfully we can live, so that whatever that effect is a wholesome, skillful way of coming together, that we're uplifting each other and not causing harm or disharmony. So I have to say also that the invitation in Cloverdale and just rolling into somebody's restaurant, having them with big smiles on their face, just bring so much food and kindness, and then allowing us into their living space so that we could rest until their ride came. And then the ride coming, so just, you know, every aspect of the way, and to have, you know, one of, you know, Beth are living here and then willing to drive us back. And so from start to finish, it was just time after time after time. And I also want to say that there were many other encounters. I could talk way too long. People would be irritated at me. We've got morning puja tomorrow. But just for all of those people, you know, just I really want to honor and thank, the Sangha for allowing us to do this walk. I want to thank Tanti Tepanyo for being an excellent walking partner, and really thoughtful, never complained, kept offering, totally open. And all the long, long list of kindnesses that we received, either materially or just through good wishes, through waving, through log truck drivers flashing the peace sign at us, and, you know, whatever, you know, firemen waving at you, and whatever, just all the kindnesses. And then, and there are some key people that I didn't speak about tonight that stopped to offer us food along the way. And I can't tell you how many people said, I know Ajahn Amaro, who was a co-abbot here up until a few years ago. Many of you know him. Many of them had seen our monks and had met Ajahn Amaro. And it's just really heartening to know how many people out there practice meditation, practice Dhamma, have a spiritual practice, and are affected by the Buddha Dhamma. It's way more than you realize. It's way more than you realize. So... and thank you for your patience. I've spoken for an hour and 7 minutes, which is a long Dhamma talk. And nobody walked out. So I think I'll just close this here. Yeah, enough. So. Sadhu.